The walls of Erin Moulton's house in Windham are covered with her son's artwork. A turtle with a paper plate shell, a drawing of a red truck hauling a Christmas tree. The license plate reads, "To Mom." In a room next to the kitchen, there's a big wooden table Erin's family uses for arts and crafts. Today, it's covered in documents, photos, a huge red binder.
It's a lot. This is only a little. That's like the big moments.
Erin is the genealogy and reference librarian at the Derry Public Library. People come to her for information on local history and for help looking up their ancestors. She's like a history detective.
To me, it's a rush, and I'll go flying through the archives. I'll be diving through the newspapers, and I think it's exhilarating. It's like overturning treasure. You know, another clue brings you to another clue, brings you to another clue.
But there was one mystery Erin had never tried to solve. Something she'd heard about on her mother's side of the family, the Dainties. A rumor about her great-grandfather, John.
The rumor was that my great-grandfather had been imprisoned, and he took the fall for his son. And then there was something in there, but no one ever really said much more. And it was kind of like, well, we don't have anything else to say.
She'd also heard a darker version of the story, that John Dainty may have even killed his own daughter, Erin's great-aunt. None of the living Dainty family members knew her name. In 2020, the COVID pandemic shut down Erin's library. Stuck at home, she needed a project. Instead of learning how to make sourdough bread, Erin decided to finally get to the bottom of this family rumor. She typed John Dainty into Ancestry.com and found a census record from 1930. It listed him as an inmate in Wethersfield State Prison in Connecticut.
I thought, why is he in there? I'm going to find out. That was the simplest question I had.
Old newspaper clippings, prison records, and municipal reports revealed a cycle of troubled times for the Dainty family. John Dainty was orphaned at a young age. He was adopted into a family with another adopted daughter named Mary. The adopted siblings, Erin's great-grandparents, get married and have 5 children. The youngest son was Erin's grandfather, and the family bounces around Massachusetts and Connecticut, getting a reputation in each town they're in, especially John.
At the point that they get to New Britain in the 1920s, his oldest son has been taken out of his custody. They are using charitable resources to keep their house and get groceries, so they're in the town reports for that. They're also in the newspaper as, occasionally having the police called on them because he's being abusive to his children and it's being heard by neighbors.
And then, while digging through old newspapers, Erin makes a more shocking and terrible discovery. On February 22, 1925, a doctor goes to John and Mary Dainty's home in New Britain, Connecticut. The doctor is there to care for the couple's 12-year-old daughter, also named Mary. Mary is very unwell. The doctor later testifies that John Dainty and Mary's older brother, Lewis, are acting tense. At one point, Lewis, who was 18 or 19, screams out for no apparent reason. The doctor calls the police, saying Mary's condition is serious and the circumstances seem suspicious. A detective orders Mary be taken to New Britain General Hospital, and she's in shock, going in and out of consciousness. The same day she's admitted, around midnight, Mary dies.
In her death certificate from the state of Connecticut, it says her primary cause of death, probably abortion. Secondary or contributory is septicemia.
Abortion was illegal in 1920s Connecticut. According to the New Britain Herald, Mary likely developed the infection from one of the instruments used in the procedure.
As I dug more into the newspapers, it said she gave a deathbed statement. So I was like, wait, well, what's happening? Can I dig any further?
Before she died, Mary spoke to a doctor and a prosecutor who came to her hospital bed. She told them she had been sexually assaulted by her father, her brother, and a family acquaintance. The 3 men are arrested. Only Mary's father pleads guilty to assaulting his 12-year-old daughter. He's sentenced to 4 to 10 years in prison, but the state prosecutor dropped the charges against Mary's brother and the other man.
So he gets 4 years in prison. They get none. And I was at that point just basically enraged because she, of course, was dead.
Erin finally understood the truth behind the family rumors. It seemed her great-grandfather hadn't really taken the fall for his son. He was just the only one of Mary's alleged abusers to be held accountable. But as Erin pieced together these events from 100 years ago, there were still so many questions she couldn't find answers to about what exactly happened to her great-aunt and why. Erin tried to get the transcripts from John Dainty's trial, but they had been destroyed. She imagined Mary in her last moments on the hospital bed.
To be in such a situation where you can't have a safe abortion, but you have your father's or brother's child, well, what is the decision you make? And also, she's 12 and has zero resources, and she didn't have a system to rely on within the town, so she really was alone.
Children who die young have short paper trails. But Erin did manage to find some details about Mary. The autopsy report offered some information about what she looked like.
Black bobbed hair, brown eyebrows, and bluish gray eyes. So she looks quite a bit like, in my mind, like my cousin, who has that same hair and blue eyes.
She finds Mary listed as a Girl Scout in a New Britain newspaper. So she looks up the uniforms she would have worn, the knots she would have known how to tie, the pledge she would have learned. She finds Mary's school census record at the New Britain Public Library and reads up on the schools Mary went to.
I wish I knew more. I wish I knew what she liked to do. I wish I knew if she enjoyed certain games or hobbies or types of music. I want to know if she had any good friends or positive experiences in her life or someone who was really reliable. I wish I knew any of those things. I don't think I'm gonna. This one is the plea for parole.
But Erin does know a lot of information about her great-grandfather, John Dainty, Mary's abuser. She got a copy of his inmate file, put all the documents in a huge red binder, the one sitting in front of us on her family's art table.
And the first thing on that inmate file is his face, because it's his inmate photo. The first thing I thought was that we look similar, in specifically in how his right side of his face hangs down a little bit farther near the lip. That upset me because I have the same structure on the right side of my face, and I don't want to be like him in any way, shape, or form.
John Dainty got out of prison in 1931. He went back to prison a year later for violating parole, this time for allegedly sexually assaulting his other daughter, 10-year-old Clara. And after John goes back to prison, Clara writes to his parole officer from the family's new home in Waterbury, Connecticut. It's a chilling note, written in wide, looping cursive on lined paper.
It says, "Watch out for him, because when he gets out, he will come to Waterbury, find out where we live, and come here and kill us all." And that's the last thing on the file. And I was like, what? So I went then into the census records, because if he is getting out in 1933, I was thinking, okay, maybe in 1940, because that would have been the next federal census. We'll see them all in different places.
But the 1940 census shows John Dainty living with his wife and children in Waterbury. Erin says the records show her great aunt Clara lived with her parents until John died in 1948.
It definitely was like they never escaped each other until death.
Erin made one more important discovery. She found out where Mary was buried, under a patch of grass in a New Britain cemetery, in an unmarked grave. Erin thought, at least I can fix that. In 2023, Erin and her family raised money to put a headstone there.
I hope she knows that someone cared, even if it was 100 100 years too late.
This September, I met Erin and some of her relatives at the cemetery.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm Jackie.
Very nice to meet you. I'm Mary.
So nice to meet you.
I'm Mary Dainty.
This is Erin's mom, who also happens to be named Mary.
I was told, you know, mainly I was born on the Virgin Mother's birthday. I'm Catholic. That's why I was named Mary, but I have a feeling it played into it. It played into it.
She says her father didn't tell her much about her Aunt Mary, not even her name. Learning the truth has made her grateful that somehow her dad was able to break the cycle, to give her a childhood without the poverty and abuse he and his siblings lived through.
I was relieved in a way, in a strange, sick way, that there was information and history that we could know instead of guessing. And that actually these are, as we know now, secrets that shouldn't be kept.
Erin gives her mom a soft brush and they gently wash and scrub the headstone. Erin's aunt puts two bouquets of artificial daisies and roses next to the grave.
Look at that, looks lovely.
It does look lovely.
They finish cleaning the stone and stand in a semicircle around it. Erin begins with a few words.
Your dad and siblings spent their childhood with a bad guy at the wheel, and that's scary. So taking the time to just say thank you for not turning out the same way.
and Mary steps forward, holding a black family Bible with tabs poking out to mark each book.
Finding this story was really emotional for me. And again, Mary Dainty, person with my name. And something that we had said last time and we say today is thank you to Mary, because she gave her life and was not a recognized person. And in recognizing her, I think we gained a lot. And hopefully, in recognizing her, we set her free.
Mary opens the Bible and begins to read from the book of Ecclesiastes.
As we look at our lives, all things have their season. And in their times, all things pass under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant.
The headstone reads, Mary E. Dainty, August 5th, 1912, to February 22nd, 1925. The Girl Scouts emblem is at the top, and on the bottom, the family had a message engraved. We love you, and love brings you home. Jackie Harris, NHPR News.